From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International, Science and the Search for Meaning, Five Questions, a special series from To the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Tim Fleming. This hour, can science be sacred?
You have to have an open mind. I mean, you can't have a closed mind in science. You can't go around with your eyes closed and a pair of blinkers on you.
Most of the early great scientists, whether it's Max Planck, Niels Bohr, Erwin Schrödinger, Heisenberg, Einstein, they were thoughtful, reflective, could even say contemplative.
Does science have anything to offer those of us who want some experience of the sacred, who yearn for deeper meaning and more fulfilling lives, but have given up on organized religion? Today we'll explore the far corners of science as we search for the sacred.
I hear the whippoorwill cry. I see.
First, we turn to a fascinating and growing movement among secular scientists and philosophers. They believe the natural world all around us is full of marvels and mysteries. These scientists typically don't believe in God, or at least any conventional notion of the divine, but they also don't like the label atheist. Some call themselves religious naturalists. In fact, they want a science-based spirituality. Steve Paulson has this report on what he calls the awe and wonder crowd.
Perhaps no living scientist has done as much as E.O. Wilson to explain why so many of us feel exhilarated when we're outdoors, immersed in the natural world. Wilson's a renowned biologist at Harvard who's won two Pulitzer Prizes for his science writing. He popularized the concept of biophilia, the notion that we're hardwired for powerful responses to the natural world. And he thinks this deep connection to nature can take on religious overtones. In fact, Wilson grew up a fundamentalist Southern Baptist, but he abandoned his faith once he learned the story of evolution. So I wondered, just what exactly does inspire awe and wonder in E.O. Wilson?
It certainly involves a sense of sublimity and a sense of the mightiness and the splendor and almost indecipherable intricacy of something greater than ourselves. It's not limited to religious revelation either. It appears there. A lot of mysticism of religion arises directly from it, but it's equally experienced by the secularist whose mind opens to the splendor and intricacy of the universe.
I've talked with some atheists who have suggested that what they really need is a spiritual atheism. They need this sense of awe. They're competing against the religious stories, the religious traditions that have been passed down over the eons with very emotionally powerful stories. Does the non-believer need that as well? Can the non-believer have that?
The answer to the second question is yes. The answer to the first question, do they have it, is usually no. The problem with secular humanism is that it does lack it.
Well, would you be comfortable in saying that science can have a sacred dimension?
Sacred, yes, in the sense of spirituality. Sacred in the sense of creation myth and of a belief of a personal, intrusive deity, no.
So what do you mean by spirituality?
The same sensation of grandeur, even of holiness. This would be, I think, based upon deeper and deeper understanding of just how intricate the universe is and how surprising. The story of the origin of life on this planet, the time scale, the magnitude of it, all of that together engenders in me probably even more awe than I ever felt as a devout young Southern Baptist growing up.
Ursula Goodenough is another secular scientist who marvels at the awe and wonder of nature. She's a leading cell biologist at Washington University and author of the book The Sacred Depths of Nature. But her appreciation of the natural world didn't come easily. Around the age of 20, Goodenough was shaken by a kind of existential panic after taking a physics class. During a camping trip, she looked up at the night sky. and suddenly felt overwhelmed by the pointlessness of it all.
I suddenly realized that I was no longer thinking of our place as being this cute little planet with a sky over it, that the whole thing was huge and immense and that the sun was going to go out. And I got very, very upset and disoriented and fearful, terrified, actually.
That terror stayed with Goodenough for a long time. Finally, she realized what the problem was, her compulsion to find some ultimate purpose to the universe and to her own life. She then found a way to work through her anxiety.
Why there is anything at all, why the universe is here, why I'm here, is a mystery. Once I did that, then I was in a place where I could just take the whole story and take quarks and electrons and galaxies and everything and just say, okay, this is the way it is. Don't know why, but wow, it's pretty amazing. And lucky me to be a part of it.
So you're saying this kind of scientific understanding for you, I mean, the more that you mm-hmm. really get into the way life evolved, where the Earth came from, all of that, that really evokes for you profound feelings of awe and wonder.
You bet. I can't think of anything that even comes close.
What's so striking about this movement among scientists to find or even create a spirituality without God is that it spans so many different disciplines, from biology to neuroscience to physics. Take Joel Premack, a cosmologist at UC Santa Cruz and co-author of the book The View from the Center of the Universe. He's out to show that we humans are not just an insignificant speck in the cosmos. Premack believes we're special in various ways. For instance, our size is right smack in the middle of the largest and smallest things in the universe, roughly halfway between the vast scale of galaxies and the tiny world of atoms. And he points to other factors as well.
We're made of the rarest stuff in the universe, heavy elements, the kind of atoms that are only created deep inside stars. And we live at the center of the time of our planetary system. The Earth and the Sun were born about 4.5 billion years ago, and about 5 billion years in the future, the Sun is going to profoundly change. It will turn into a red giant star, and it may burn Earth to a crisp. So in very interesting ways, we live at the center of time, at the center of size scales, and the human mind is the most complex thing that we have discovered in the entire universe, and that makes us pretty special.
Joel Premack wants to tell a new creation story, grounded in science, but it's a particular way of thinking about science that creates space for meaning and purpose, two words we more often associate with religion. George Valiant is also trying to formulate a science-based spirituality, but he's looking at the latest brain science. Valiant is a psychiatrist at Harvard and author of the book Spiritual Evolution, A Scientific Defense of Faith. He believes positive emotions like joy, love, and gratitude are what shape our basic sense of spirituality. He says these feelings are generated by our brain's limbic system, and they're deeply felt emotions, not abstract ideas coming from the cortex, the more analytical part of the brain. Valiant is out to rescue spirituality from religious dogma, but he's also challenging the way scientists usually talk about faith.
The trouble with science is it takes us back up into the cortex, and I think that where meaning comes from is fostering and bringing positive emotions into consciousness so that it isn't science I'm pushing as much as to say if you can pull up into awareness joy, forgiveness, love, and compassion, your life is going to have a whole lot of meaning.
In the pantheon of sacred science, one of the luminaries is Jane Goodall, the famous primatologist who spent decades observing chimpanzees in Tanzania. She's often wondered what the study of chimps can reveal about our hominid ancestors millions of years ago, and perhaps even about the origins of religion. Goodall is also the rare scientist who talks openly about her own mystical experiences.
One moment was very, very special, and that was when I was sitting in the forest with David Greybeard. And I picked up a fruit and held it out to him, and he turned his head away, and I put my hand closer. And he turned, looking directly into my eyes. He reached out, took the fruit, dropped it. He really didn't want it. And then he very gently squeezed my hand, which is how chimpanzees reassure each other. And so in that moment, we communicated in a way that seems to predate words. Perhaps in a way that was used by our own common ancestor millions of years ago. And it was an extraordinary feeling. It was bridging these two worlds.
Sounds like you're very drawn to this whole idea of somehow knowing the world without language, without words.
I am fascinated by it. I always have been. I mean, we think with words. And when we don't think with words, I think we come close to what mystics might describe as a mystical experience, because I don't think that words would come into that.
Did you have experiences like that at Gombe? I mean, what we would call mystical experiences?
Yeah, sometimes. One was just when I'd been following a little group of chimpanzees and I was very wet, and they climbed in the evening up into this tree which had new shoots of beautiful lime green, and the sun behind them was making them shine, and the trunks of the trees were still wet, and the chimpanzees' coats were black ebony shot with little gleams of chestnut, and the smell of ripe figs was strong in the air. And then this beautiful male bushbuck appeared with his coat dark with the rain, and it seemed I could hear the insects really loud and clear, and it was just incredibly vivid beingness and being at one with that beautiful world.
It's one thing to say there's something sacred about the natural world, and quite another to try to create a new science-based religion with no transcendent God. But that's exactly what Stuart Kaufman aims to do. Kaufman's a biologist, one of the gurus of complexity theory, and a recipient of a MacArthur Genius Award. In his book Reinventing the Sacred, he criticizes the reductionist paradigm of modern science, saying it's left us flailing in a sea of meaninglessness. He claims that reductionism simply can't explain the inherent unpredictability of biology or human culture. But what's most audacious is Kaufman's attempt to redefine the word God for non-believers. So what is Kaufman's God? The ceaseless creativity of nature itself.
God is the most powerful symbol humanity has created. We've been worshiping God or gods at least since the sacred Earth Mother 10,000 years ago in Europe. Whether it's the creator, transcendent God of the Abrahamic tradition or other notions of God, God carries with it a sense of awe, reverence, wonder that no other symbol carries. Now we have our choice. Is it more astonishing to believe that a creator God created everything that has come to exist, the planets, the galaxies, chemistry, life, consciousness, agency, in 6 days? Or is it equally or even more astonishing and awesome to believe what is almost certainly the truth, namely that all of this came to be all on its own?
Okay, you can say all that, but you don't have to talk about God. And yet you, for some reason, want to invoke...
want to invoke God.
Yeah, right. Why?
First of all, we don't have to. I do not want to invoke a transcendent God. I do believe in this new scientific worldview. I think that even without using the God word, if you feel yourself in this new scientific worldview, it changes your stance towards it from one of the secular humanists' lack of spirituality to a kind of sense of awed wonder that was missing 50 years ago and is missing in the secular world largely that we live in, which is a consumerist, materialist society, where being spiritual is, if not frowned upon, it's something that you do in the privacy of, you know, your own mind. Mm-hmm. You don't talk about it openly because there's something questionable and flaky about it for those of us who don't believe in God.
That's biologist Stuart Kaufman. We also heard from Jane Goodall, George Valiant, Joel Primack, Ursula Goodenough, and E.O. Wilson, all practitioners in one way or another of what you might call sacred science.
Steve Paulson prepared that report on science and the sacred. Coming up, the healing powers of trees and the deep connection between physics and the contemplative life. For to the best of our knowledge, I'm Jim Fleming. This hour, Can Science Be Sacred? Is part of our special series, Science and the Search for Meaning, Five Questions, brought to you by Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.
Our series, Science and the Search for Meaning, Five Questions, is supported by grants from the John Templeton Foundation, supporting science, investing in the big questions, by Promega Corporation, providing tools and technologies for research in life science, and by the Neuer Foundation, exploring meaning and commonality of human experience.